Here and we are on air. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Edge Talk. I'm John Johnson. I'm sitting in Glasgow, Scotland, and I'm particularly excited to have Oliver Quinlan here tonight to hopefully talk a wee bit about Raspberry Pis. I'm a latecomer to the Raspberry Pi party, but I've been enjoying playing with them and thinking about them quite a bit. Good evening, Oliver.
Good evening. Hi. Good to be here.
Great. And maybe you could start off just by giving us a wee bit of background, because I know you have just moved into this new role in the Raspberry Pi Foundation, but you've got a sort of long history of education and things. Maybe you could give people a bit of background of where you've been and what you've done and how you got where.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Well, I kind of started off in education in IT support, which was just something I was doing while I was at university, really. I come from a family of teachers. My mum's a head teacher, and my grandfather was a teacher trainer and founded some teacher training colleges, and my grandmother on the other side was an HMI inspector, so I've sort of always been immersed in this stuff. But I started just by helping out with some use of technology in the school that my mum was head at in my university holidays, and it started off as fixing things, really. But they had various technology like interactive whiteboards and projectors and sensory equipment, and I ended up working more and more with the teachers on supporting them with ways of using those with the children, which was something I found really interesting and exciting. So I, rather than sort of staying in the technical route, I decided to train as a teacher, and I became a primary teacher, and I taught at a school in Birmingham, in the UK, Robin Hood Primary School in Birmingham, which was sort of quite well known for using technology for quite a long time in their lessons, and we did a lot of project-based learning stuff there as well. And then I ended up moving down to Plymouth University to work in their primary teacher education department, and being primary, I ended up covering various different subjects, but I mostly specialised in ICT and then computing when it came along and the curriculum changed. So I took over as the subject leader for primary computing and developed all their computing courses, and while I was working there, I was doing my master's and sort of doing a lot of research training and working on research, and my master's project was looking at the use of blogs and online media with trainee teachers and how that affected and helped them to build their professional identities whilst they were training. And through the research side, I spotted an opportunity at Nesta, the innovation charity, working on some trials that they were running, or they were about to start running, of different types of educational technology in schools. So I moved over to Nesta and I managed some research trials with technology, and I also got involved in their Digital Makers project and did a big report for them on opportunities for young people to get involved in digital making, which kind of led me to the Raspberry Pi Foundation, and I just started there back in middle of January this year, and there I'm the research manager, which is a new role. So I have the kind of the really exciting and sometimes slightly daunting role of kind of developing that new role and developing what we do in terms of research and evaluation across the foundation.
It just sounds like a wonderfully exciting career altogether if you're interested in education and in technology in particular. Oh, that sounds fantastic stuff. Thanks, Oliver. So tonight I think we really want to cover a wee bit of basics about what a Raspberry Pi is and what people are using them for and what you're doing with them and what you hope your research will do, and maybe some stuff around how people could possibly use them in the classroom, how you see fitting in to the classroom. I know that's quite a lot of questions, and also anything you're interested in sharing about them.
Sure, yeah, of course. Okay, well, for anyone
while we're doing that as well, what we'll try and do is watch the Twitter stream. I see there's a few people tweeting along already. If you've got a question for Oliver, if you stick either tweet it at Oliver or stick the hashtag edutalk in the tweet somewhere, we'll try and pick it up and address it if we can. Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I can see a few people retweeting and things already, which is cool.
Yeah, okay. So I've just been at South by Southwest Festival in Texas, and so I've spent the whole of this weekend talking over and over and over to people about what a Raspberry Pi is. We had one little boy come over and sort of said, "What's this?" And my colleague said, "Oh, it's a Raspberry Pi." And he said, "Oh, I love pi." And then proceeded, he must have been about six, and he proceeded to recite pi to about 100 decimal places. Turns out he was talking about the number rather than the computer, but hopefully he came away loving Raspberry Pi as well. For those of you who sort of haven't come across them or have just maybe heard a bit of stuff in the media, Raspberry Pi is a computer. It's a desktop computer, but it's the size of a credit card, and it is only $35. So it is a low-cost, relatively high-power for the price computer that can be used for all sorts of things. So it was originally invented by a guy called Eben Upton, who was working as an academic in Cambridge University, teaching computer science, and was really kind of... Eben had grown up using BBCs and Spectrums and all those computers that you plugged into your TV and you could program, and in fact, many of them you had to program to get them to do anything at all. And he was finding that he had applicants for computer science at Cambridge, and the most they'd done was maybe create a website with a bit of HTML. And he was really hoping that, in the 21st century, that people would have been able to do a lot more of that kind of thing. And he realised that there were really, in some ways, decreasing opportunities for people to learn about computing and programming, because lots of the technology trends are to put things more and more in sealed boxes. So your tablets, your smartphones, even laptops now are getting very thin, very few user replaceable parts, not very repairable, and they're quite expensive. So parents, don't, and schools as well, don't necessarily want young people messing around with the fundamental things that make them work. In fact, in schools and organisations, for years, things have been hugely locked down. So the idea was, let's make a computer that is kind of cheap enough that it can be really accessible. Young people could even buy them with their pocket money. Parents could buy them as a sort of relatively, almost throwaway Christmas gift or birthday gift. They would be open enough that young people could learn about programming and they could actually play with the fundamentals of the computer and the system. Almost in some senses, they're cheap enough that the adults wouldn't care about them. But what's been really interesting is that adults have turned out to care about them quite a bit. And there's been a huge community of hobbyists and makers who have really latched onto Raspberry Pi and started using it in all sorts of projects, from robots to beer brewing factories, and that has meant that a huge community has grown up about Raspberry Pi, and today they're as much a tool for kids to learn programming or for educators to use in the classroom as they are a part of this big maker community that exists all across the world. But fundamentally, it's a computer, just a really cheap one, and one that's been designed for people to mess around with and tinker with. And that's why when you see it on, BBC News website or the TV or wherever you happen to see people talking about it, you just see this kind of credit card size circuit board, because it comes like that without a case kind of inviting you to try and figure out what on earth it is, really, which is all part of the idea.
So one of the things for myself when I first see that is I'm really scared that I'm going to break it, because usually I'm used to, as you say, a sealed box with some metal around it and to be really secure. How robust is a $35 computer?
They are relatively robust. I mean, we just did 3 days at South by Southwest, kind of seven hours a day on a stand, and we had a bunch of them that were not in cases, just plugged into a cheap TV and a keyboard, and kids were coming up.
there's one kid started playing with one actually, and he obviously looked a lot older than he was, and I started trying to explain to him how to do the programming challenge that we'd set, and he pointed at the screen and just said yellow, and I realised his language probably wasn't quite up to typing in Python code yet. But you know, these things were all there the whole time, you know, being picked up, messed around with, bare circuit boards, and there was no problems at all. They are really robust, and I think some of that fear that you talk about is something that's sort of cultural, that a lot of us have assimilated this kind of fear of anything that looks bare bones like circuit boards, that we shouldn't be touching that, and therefore we shouldn't have any kind of be developing any understanding of it. I mean, to be fair, I think some of it is technological, because the tech in it is a lot more robust than the tech in the kind of PCs I used to pull apart when I was a teenager and have to be careful to earth myself to the radiator and not wear a woolen jumper and stuff like that. But yeah, in my experience, they've been really relatively robust. Some of the connectors and electronics, when you start connecting stuff onto them, you have to take a little bit of care, but that's all part of the process, I think. I haven't broken one yet. I'd say that much.
That sounds great. No, I mean, as I say, to me, I get quite nervous, but I've found them to be very adaptable to all sorts of things, and I'm not a hardware person at all. I like my sealed box, actually, mostly, but I've found them to be a very useful thing for doing all sorts of stuff that you normally can't access, I guess, is the maybe thing that's interesting about them. You normally can't run a server without spending lots of money or, you know, doing something. But then you've got one for £35 that can sit on the shelf somewhere and you can play with it and do things. So is that, do you think that sort of the flexibility that they can do lots of different things? I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that's there. What is their main use then? That's the question.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I'm fascinated by things like that. Like, once you make a computer that only costs $35, it doesn't seem like much in some ways. It's like, okay, well, it's still a computer. But sometimes the fact that it's so cheap makes you treat it really differently. So you see people not worried about putting it in a helium balloon and sending it up as high as it goes and hoping it comes down on land, sort of transmitting photos while it goes, or sticking it in a bird box and having it take photos of the animals and wildlife. And I think that cost thing kind of can really change how people see something, and the size is the same. And of course, recently, back in November, Raspberry Pi released the Raspberry Pi Zero, which is only about a third the size of the credit card one, and only costs $5. And it's more cut down. It doesn't have as many features, but it's a really interesting thing, I think, because once you've got a computer that's $5. You can just build it into anything. I mean, it's at the kind of price where a child could build it into a weekend project they've come up with, and instead of feeling that at the end they have to take it apart and be able to use it for something else, you can potentially buy another one, and then you get into actually making products that have a full computer inside them and all of the power that brings inside your kind of weekend projects that you've made. And I think that's really exciting.
I mean, a lot of us would spend £5 on a magazine, which wouldn't even last a weekend. We can probably say that a couple of times. That's a computer for £5. And you need, I guess, to get started, you need some other kit.
Yeah, you do need some other bits and bobs. I mean, our CEO of Raspberry Pi Foundation, Philip, jokes that we managed to make the only computer where the cables you need to plug it in cost more than the actual computer. And, you know, this is possibly true, although, I mean, the Raspberry Pi Zero is designed for projects, really. It's designed for building into things. It's designed for the kind of people who've already got a little toolbox of cables, and they can plug stuff in. And those won't be the only people who use it by any means. It will make these computers really accessible to people. But, you know, you don't need too much to get going. They're designed to be able to plug into a television, the thinking being that lots of kids have televisions in their rooms these days, and there's lots of people have several televisions around their house. And then you just need a cheap USB mouse and keyboard to get started. Now, I must admit, not all children are going to have access to their own television at home in their bedroom, and the kind of... there's more to be done to make it this kind of thing totally accessible to everyone. But getting the computer down to that kind of cost and making it available is an important part of that, I think.
I think we'd be quite surprised by the number of children across all sorts of sectors of society who are sitting with a television in their bedroom. And it's probably more a case of where do I borrow an old keyboard and mouse? I guess you could probably get second-hand keyboard and mice for buttons.
You can get brand new ones for very cheap when you look on, you know, electronic stores and stuff like that. And you probably get them on FreeCycle and things like that. So, yeah, it just makes these things really accessible. The other thing about Raspberry Pi is that when it was first designed, it was designed with a bunch of pins on it, which are called GPIO pins, and they just look like little copper pins sticking up, and they give you direct access to some of the functions of the computer, which you don't normally have. You know, normally a computer will have USB ports, a network port, and so on, but you have to have devices that have been designed and made to plug in with those particular connectors, but the GPIO ports, they're general purpose, so you can actually just plug in an LED straight into them, and then you can write a program that will get that LED to turn on and off under certain circumstances. You can plug a button in as well, and you can get that going. And there's a camera module that's made that plugs into another connector, and you can start to build up little projects that involve connecting electronics to a computer. And once you do that, you can get some really exciting kind of stuff going on, what lots of people are starting to refer to as physical computing, actually setting up your own real-world physical projects that involve some level of computing as well. Obviously, you don't need a computer to be able to turn an LED on and off, but only a computer can flash an LED on and off when you receive a tweet on Twitter and alert you to that, or respond by making things happen on the internet by you pressing buttons. And that kind of possibility is even more exciting, I think.
Yeah, I like the idea of pressing a button and something happens on the internet. Same with all my other internet content, the tumbleweed will spin by, but you're actually, it's like butterflies in China. We're kind of drifting away to a rather surreal corner there. I think, I'd be interested in your take on the sort of, we've talked about the use for hobbyists, but maybe how people would, the first few things they would do on getting a Raspberry Pi. So if you were a teacher who was interested in these things, you had a spare £35, you've bought one, what was the first sort of thing you would do with it?
Well, there's quite a few things that you could do. I mean, I think the first thing as a teacher is getting it plugged in, but getting yourself an SD card with the software and putting that in. You can download all the software for free and just copy it onto an SD card, or you can buy SD cards along with the Raspberry Pis that have already got it on. But the first thing that everyone notices is that it doesn't boot up into into Windows or Mac OS and the operating systems that lots of consumers are used to. It all runs on Linux. So the first thing is people sort of getting used to this slightly different operating system. And in itself, that's really interesting because the way Linux is set up is it's very much set up as an operating system to tinker with that doesn't hide too much away from you, which really fits with the ethos of the Raspberry Pi. It also helps that it's free, so that helps to keep the cost of the whole thing down. So, I mean, first of all, just plugging in and figuring out that slightly different operating system, and getting used to using things like the terminal, where you type in commands and get the computer to do things that way, which is very much like computers used to be seen as working before we all got used to point and click. You don't have to operate it like that. You can use a point and click operating system, but part of it is discovering that power of using language to manipulate computers. And once you start to learn how to use actually written language to tell a computer what to do, suddenly the power of it is really opened up, I think. And I think there's an analogy in how much you can explain to someone by just sort of pointing and grunting versus how much you can explain by actually talking and using language. A similar thing is true of computers. You can really access the power of them once you get into that kind of command line side of things. Some people find that a little bit scary, but it's a great learning experience. There's actually a really good book that some of my colleagues put together it's part of a series of books called Magpie Essentials, and it's an introduction to using the command line in Linux. And it's really, really easy and straightforward, but it just takes you through some of that. So there's some getting used to that sort of operating system side of things. But then I think it depends where you want to go with it. You can use the Raspberry Pi just as a normal computer. So the new version has Wi-Fi on it, so you can get on the internet, and you can use Scratch for anyone who's used to running that, which is a graphical programming language. But I think fairly quickly it's a good idea to start to explore how you can plug stuff into it, whether that's LEDs or buzzers or switches, because I think therein lies an awful lot of the power in terms of getting engaged with using computers to manipulate the world. It's amazing how engaged and enthused people are when they manage to type in commands on a computer to get a light to turn on and off. It's a kind of relatively simple thing. I mean, you could get a virtual light to turn on and off on your screen, but somehow something happening in the real world is far more powerful. So those are some of the basics, but then I think there's a real ethos behind the stuff we do at the Raspberry Pi Foundation that's about following your own interests and in your own projects. So finding a project that you can actually make and learn through making is quite important. The first thing I did was very similar to the first thing lots of people do, which is try to set it up as some kind of home media server so it could be plugged into my TV and I could just beam stuff from my phone to play on the TV, plug in my hard drive with some movies on and watch them on my TV. And lots of people get started with that. The second thing I did was get one of the little camera modules and plug it in, and that's a common project that people work on as well. You can do some really cool stuff like setting up a home security camera that detects motion, which involves setting up some software that actually looks at the camera and digitally detects when a certain percentage of pixels change color, so it knows that there's movement going on, and then it can capture video and it can send it to your smartphone. And you can create a pretty sophisticated home security system for the cost of a Raspberry Pi and a little camera board, plus a whole lot of work and learning from yourself. So finding those projects, I think, is important. And for teachers, I think that's important when they're looking at doing stuff with their students as well, finding something that engages them, where there's an end goal that they really want to reach, and there isn't necessarily a path mapped out to it. That coming up with the path and figuring out what shape the path is in to reach that end goal is a big part of the kind of computing and digital making way of learning, I think.
And obviously there's a huge number of resources out there now to do with it. I just take a wee minute to say hello to Jim McLean that's listening. He's saying himself and Susan will be out around schools using various tech, including the Pi, to teach coding. That's up in Aberdeenshire here in Scotland.
Oh, great.
So I have just, which as usual, Twitter always throws me off a thread when I go on there. But yeah, so we've got this, and I say there's lots and lots of different projects, and that's maybe the thing that I think people in a classroom can find difficult, is maybe to let that develop or let people look for projects, as opposed to have a bit more control.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it is a different way of approaching things. And one of the difficult things, I think, is the amount of time people have. I mean, confined to computing lessons, that's really not a huge amount of time. I mean, I did a part of the report I did for Nesta, looked at, surveyed some teachers on how much time young people got working on computing in their days at school, and it's not much. You know, people were saying that some young people might have a single 1 hour period in their timetable every 2 weeks, which is a very little amount of time to be taking risks and to be trying something that's different, that maybe might be perceived to perhaps not work. Some of that I think is, it's important to think about how computing is a skill that contributes to other subjects as well. And I think there's lots of opportunities in subjects like particularly science is a really interesting one for looking at how computing is important in there. I mean, the amount of programming and use of computation that scientists do now is really huge, and that's something that I think young people need to get an experience of. It is important for them to be learning some of the traditional basics, but also it's important for them to experience the subject as it exists in the world. And scientists use lots of computation. Great example of how you might be able to do that is with detecting weather and getting data sets off sensors connected to a computer or something like that. So I think finding cross-curricular opportunities is the ideal, but I do understand that that is quite difficult within existing school culture as well. I think teachers just need to be pragmatic and try to do what they can with the time that they have, even if they do have to have people all working on the same projects and all producing similar kind of outcomes. So you can still structure that in a way that involves problem solving and invites different ways of doing that. I mean, I made a very simple camera project when I went on Raspberry Pi's teacher training course, Pi Academy, which all it involved was pressing a button, a photograph being taken, and that photograph being sent to Twitter. And the bit of being sent to Twitter, I actually borrowed quite a lot of other people's code for. So it's very, very simple process, but there are very many different ways that you could achieve that. And in fact, I did one way which was hugely inefficient and achieved the end, but had an awful lot of code and different bits and bobs happening to make that happen. And I spent an afternoon actually going back to basics and trying to solve that problem in a much more elegant way. So even relatively simple computing projects, you can have different ways of reaching those ends and designing them in a way that young people can experience that problem solving themselves is quite important, I think.
So out on Twitter again, Elan's saying, unless teachers are comfortable with this problem-based learning approach, they need a scheme of work and instructions. And I also noticed Louise Foreman, who I think is the one who told me about their use in Dundee, where they use Raspberry Pis to do, I think, Scratch, maybe something else. But one of the reasons they use them is it's easy to get the software onto them as opposed to getting software onto a sort of managed estate. So they actually can be used for, say, a traditional approach, an ICT lesson, learning something in Scratch, say, and they can become useful for that, because basically you swap out the standard box, unplug the keyboard, unplug the monitor, and plug it into the Pi, and you've got a slightly more flexible, if not...
Yeah, and you know, I think that's a powerful lesson as well. I mean, even if young people are just swapping this out for a sort of highly managed computer and being able to install their own software on it, I mean, that puts across one of the sort of high level important lessons, in that, you know, computers are something that you can manipulate if you approach them in the right kind of way. I mean, there are lots of specific skills that young people can learn from using technology like Raspberry Pis, but there's some really big picture ones as well about the kind of empowerment in the digital age and the power of the tools that are available to them to solve certain types of problems in the world. So it is a challenge, but I mean, it's also, I think, you know, I've come from working in formal education as a teacher, as a teacher trainer, and I'm finding it really interesting working with the Raspberry Pi Foundation, because we don't just work in formal education. We work really broadly. Some of my colleagues do some excellent work with teachers, but we also work with communities where young people are just kind of choosing to go along, and the resources and the computers themselves, they're designed to be cheap enough that we can get them into the hands of young people themselves. And I think it's important to remember that school isn't the be all and end all of people's educational experiences or their learning experiences. It's one part, and I think as a teacher, particularly as a teacher of a single subject in a secondary school or a high school, where you maybe only have an hour every week or every 2 weeks, the most you can hope really is that you can help people appreciate the importance and the power of your subject, and inspire those people who have a particular interest or a skill or an opportunity in that subject to go away and develop that even further, and give them the building blocks for that. But you can't. It's very difficult in a subject that's got a small amount of time for you to be able to sort of control that learning experience. And so I think, you know, if you can inspire students to go off and spend some of their own time and explore this kind of world, then you're doing a really good job. And, you know, some of the work we do at the foundation is about that. We're doing things like running competitions. So we've got a competition that's live at the moment linked to the British astronaut Tim Peake on the International Space Station. Mm. He's already running code on his Raspberry Pi up there that children have written. But he's now wants some music to listen to. So we've got a competition for people to use something called Sonic Pi, which is a coding environment designed for coding music, to create some music for him. And, you know, that some teachers will pick up on that and use it in their lessons. And that's wonderful if they do and if they find it a useful resource. But hopefully lots of young people will go away and spend their own time doing it. And so there's lots of room within this subject to just sort of inspire people and educate them with the knowledge that the opportunities are out there. And then it's up to them to make that choice if they're interested in it. I think not the thing about the new computing curriculum that's come in England is a lot of the rhetoric around it has been people saying, well, not everyone's going to be a programmer, so, you know, how important is this? But that's, to me, that's not really the main purpose of education. The point of having computing and programming in the curriculum is so that everyone gets an opportunity to understand this powerful thing that makes up so much of our world, to get a sort of a high-level appreciation for it, and to develop a much deeper skill set and interest if it's something that appeals to them and that they want to. And in that way, with computing, we've never been in a better place with things like, you know, $35 computers and $5 computers and free online software and things like Scratch. There's so many options for and opportunities. Young people just have to
have people showing them how interesting they are, how much fun they are, and how available they are.
So the leading question maybe, would you say that in some cases the job of the school is not so much to educate all of these pupils about computing, but just excite them enough, light the fire, to start them off in something that will maybe not, they'll not carry on in school, but they'll take home and develop there?
Well, I think pragmatically that's something that teachers should look to try and do. I mean, obviously the teachers should be trying to build up student skills as much as they can, and there are requirements of exams that they have to get them through as well when they've chosen options in that subject, and that's important. I think it would be selling school short to say that it's just about inspiring young people, but I do think that is a very important function of it, and I think pragmatically working in a subject where you have less time, then that's something that it's important to really make sure that you try and do. Obviously, I'd probably be part of the lobby fighting for having a little bit more time of computing in people's schedules. But then my undergraduate degree was in history, and the historian in me would want for them to have more history as well. And the musicians that I know would be arguing for more music. I mean, everyone argues for more of their subjects. Yeah. But getting that, there's not enough time for all young people to be experts in absolutely everything. So just giving them opportunities is what is realistic, I think, to focus on in school.
So you mentioned, I guess, the use in science, and there's an obvious connection, I suppose, to science and design and technology. And you touched on, you could use them for data collecting or, I guess, data crunching. Number crunching and things like that, and I'm wondering what sort of the arts agenda, if there's anything we can do there, because I see, you know, you're talking about cameras and things, that's an opportunity to do something in that sort of line.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, my own interest in technology was certainly catalysed by doing work in the arts, and particularly in music. I have done loads of work in music production myself, and as a hobby, and a bit as a job as well, before I was in teaching. And I think there's huge possibilities for that area, and I think we're only just kind of starting to tap into them with some of the work we're doing at Raspberry Pi. My colleague Rachel's been running a really interesting program called the Creative Technologists program, where she's been mentoring 9 young people. I think they're kind of between the ages of sort of 17 and 21, which is a really interesting age group to be running a mentoring program with, I think, because they're young people who are really developing their ideas about what they want to do with themselves and who they want to be. They're not in a position where those things are pipe dreams. They can actually make real decisions about who they are and what they do and move forward with them. And that's all about linking technology and creative arts. And some of those young people came on the program as technologists who'd done a lot of work in programming, and some of them were writers and visual artists and who wanted to learn more about technology, and they've spent the last year sort of combining those influences and working on projects that link the creative arts and technology. And there's some really, really cool, really interesting stuff. And I was talking to them the weekend before last about all of their projects. And it's just fascinating hearing how they've developed all of these ideas. They've got everything from kind of involving photography in digital arts, using sort of digital image manipulation, to one guy who's really into aerial acrobatics, who has created a rope which can generate music based on the movements of an aerial acrobat as they move across the rope. Wow.
really, I mean, has had to do loads of learning in terms of the technical side and loads of reflection in terms of his own artistic practice to figure out how to do that. And yeah, it's fascinating. They've got an exhibition coming up, actually. I think it's in April. There's some details on the Raspberry Pi blog, but if anybody who's listening is around in the Cambridge area or would like to trek over to the Cambridge area, it's the 23rd of April. I've just checked here. They've got an exhibition of their works, which is going to be really interesting, and I'm sure we'll be sharing loads of stuff online. So yeah, that's an area that we're really exploring, and I think holds huge potential, because one of the things I found in the research I did at Nesta when I was looking at young people's interests was that most of the opportunities for young people to learn about technology, certainly informally, I mean, in school it probably depends on the teacher and the approach that they take, but most of the sort of big programs that young people can go to are very much pitched at people who have a strong interest in technology. So it's like, come to this thing and you will learn how to code, learn how to be a programmer, learn how to manipulate technology. And there's lots of young people for whom that's a very obvious interest, and that's great. But there's a lot of young people who don't really identify with that as a strong interest in their lives. And but they have other interests that could be explored in really interesting ways through the use of digital technology. And I think that's a huge area as this kind of sector of digital learning continues to mature, that we should really be looking at if we really do believe that technology is an important part of everyone's life to different extents. Then we should have lots of opportunities for people to engage with it based on those different interests.
Oh, definitely. I'm going to circle back round to school in a wee minute because of some of the tweets that are coming in. But one of the things I really like this opportunity is that this is a really enabling device. If I was going to do something, say, with images on the internet, and I needed a server that was going to run software that wasn't just standard web server software, it would cost quite a lot of money to do that. And the Raspberry Pi gives you the opportunity to plug it into your home network, open up a firewall or two, and Bob's your uncle. You've got you're very powerful, if not necessarily the fastest, but most of these things won't be getting millions of hits or need the sort of huge resource that a really popular site would need. But it allows you to extend away a wee bit from just the sort of standard web technologies. And I thought the arts is one that particularly would be interesting. It's just Jim McLean again, he's saying many schools that need someone to have the spark and resources to get things moving. And I guess that talks to your Nesta role as well in research. But how do we do this?
Yeah, it does. It does have somebody to get the spark to get things going. But you know, that's the same of most things in education, I think. And I think there are lots of people with the spark. I think as we demonstrate more and more possibilities of this this kind of technology, and I don't just mean Raspberry Pi, I just mean digital technology in general, then I think more people can potentially get the spark because they can get involved in it and they can use it. But that's going to take, you know, lots of hard work. I think it's hard for people to get a spark from something that's just some information online or is just a credit card size computer that they've been put in their hand with nothing else surrounding it. And that's why I think it's really important to work on kind of community building as part of all of this, connecting people together. I mean, amazing things have happened in the last sort of 10 years with educators connecting online and sharing ideas. I remember sort of 2009 when I first started using Twitter for sharing teaching ideas. It was a very
a hugely supportive and really rich, but quite narrow in many ways, community of educators online sharing. And more recently, I think, you know, we're seeing educators with no interest in technology at all sharing online on Twitter and using technology to communicate. And that's a really sort of interesting trend, I think. But yeah, it's building up those communities, building up that support, helping people to light each other's fires is as important, I think, as providing those like how-to guides and online resources or software and computers. It's all part of the picture, I think.
Yeah, that sounds great. And the Raspberry Pi Foundation has got a community tied into it, doesn't it? There's an online community at raspberrypi.org, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the really fascinating things about how it's grown, I think. I mean, one of the things that has made Raspberry Pi so successful is the fact that the computer is really good. You know, it's really well designed. But there are other competitors out there, single board computers. You know, they offer different affordances. You know, I'm probably pretty biased, but I think the Raspberry Pi is, you know, the most effectively balanced kind of set of resources for price and so on. But you can disagree with me on that. But one of the things that it does have is the community of people that's grown up around it, from that kind of maker community and now a teacher community as well. And a young people community, actually. I was at the Raspberry Pi 4th birthday party celebrations weekend before last. And there was a whole community of children, young children and teenagers as well. I think the most interesting thing I saw was the several groups of teenage Raspberry Pi enthusiasts who'd come along, you know, travelled across the country to come and meet together. I assume quite a few of them knew each other only through online connections until those kinds of events, and they came together around that. And so, yeah, that strong community is a huge importance, partly because it provides lots of kind of inspiration and people sharing projects that can make you say, wow, I could do that. Also, sort of even more practically, because if you want to try and do something, if you can split a problem up into its component parts, somebody has very likely done each of those parts before. So you can go out and you can find their blog, or you can talk to them on forums or on Twitter or online, and you can learn how to achieve what you want to achieve. You're never left too far away from someone who might have done something close to what you're trying to do. Yeah, so that's important too.
It's almost like you've got a set of building blocks to remix into your own desires, I guess. And own bit of fun. Oliver, I realise that time is chipping on here, and I probably said to you I'll take half an hour of your time, and we're now poking on towards an hour. So
always the way with a good conversation.
And then literally, I think a lot of people could listen to you for an awful long time, because this is a very exciting thing, I think. There's obviously a lot of excitement in the community and all the rest of it, but is there any other things you want to touch on or talk about before we kind of round up with links and the likes?
I think it's probably just worth, you know, having emphasised that community side of things. It's probably, we've talked quite a lot about Raspberry Pi as a thing and as a computer, but it's probably just worth emphasising that one of the really interesting things about the Raspberry Pi Foundation that sort of attracted me to go and join them and work with them is that they're actually an educational charity that sort of makes computers and has obviously gained an awful lot of traction from making computers, but it's not necessarily just focused on making computers. And you know, we've had I've joined the team at a time where it's growing quite a lot. It's Raspberry Pi and Code Club merged late last year. Code Club, who provide and support programming clubs for primary school age children, And there's loads of education work that's happening already, and loads more planned that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the products that the trading side of the charity makes. And so, you know, that's a really exciting place to be. You know, not being, we're not just tied to promoting a certain type of computer. I think everyone who's working there thinks it's really good for certain things, but we're supporting lots of work and getting involved in lots of work that doesn't have anything to do with the actual Raspberry Pi computers, but is just to do with helping people to learn in the areas of digital making and computing. So, you know, even for those people who might be thinking, well, I've already got a whole computer suite of whatever devices that I happen to like. I don't want to go out and get myself something new or have to buy into this whole thing. I think there's probably still some interesting work that you could get involved with that we're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that charity angle and the fact that I guess the whole project is designed to do good rather than make money is something that's interesting. There's not many other computer manufacturers that could say that. That makes it attractive. And certainly crossover, I've found that quite a lot of things that you can do on a Raspberry Pi, you can do bits of them on your normal computer. You know, you just, in a Mac, you open up a terminal, and I'm sure there's ways to do that in Windows too. So there's a nice crossover there.
And you know, even if as a tool, it just makes people realise that they can get more creative and develop their skills in using their other computers. Then, in some ways, it's done its job. There's something very powerful about having a sort of a physical thing to make you delve into that kind of stuff, I think.
Mm. Brilliant. So, you are on Twitter, as you say, at Oliver Quinlan.
That's right.
I'll pop that in the show notes. You've got a blog at the rather nicely named quinlearn.com.
Yes. I've got a newsletter that I run off Quinlearn. And I've got a kind of personal blog at oliverquinlan.com. as well. So the Quinlearn newsletter tends to be more kind of commentary on things, and my blog tends to be more kind of writing of things that I've come up with myself, although often drawing on other people's stuff and hugely influenced by all the interesting things going on out there, of course.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of Raspberry Pi stuff coming out on your blog recently. So good places to learn, and of course the Raspberry Pi, it's raspberrypi.org.
That's right, yes.
So those are the...
Yeah, there's a great blog on there that every single day people from the foundation share things to do with Raspberry Pi, very often just really cool projects that people have made. So in terms of that inspiration that we've spent quite a long time talking about, there's quite a lot of that on there.
That's brilliant. So what I'll do is I'll get these together, the links to go with the audio when it pops up on EduTalk in the next couple of days. Folks who have been listening and tweeting, thanks for the feedback. I hope you've found it as fascinating as I have. There's just not enough hours in the day for this stuff, and I'm going to have to add the Raspberry Pi blog to my RSS feed. So just huge thanks to yourself, Oliver.
Thank you, thanks for having me. It's been interesting to talk.
I think we've done a good job of being excited about the Raspberry Pi. I think that's the best, which is good. So I'll say to everybody that's listening out there, good night. If you want to share this, it'll be on the EduTalk site over the next couple of days, and we'll be back next Tuesday, I think, and Wednesday next week. So we'll see you later.